you, Sonia. Do we have any old business?
The minutes indicated a problem with the Kenny plaque that's on the large rock.
Can you hear?
No.
Raise your hand if you can.
It was Kenny plaque on the large rock that had finally ended up after being moved from Kenny Park several times. It was right on the corner, but it was fenced off from the remaining landscaping for the plunge. I was fortunate enough to get to the design review committee of the city when they presented the landscaping plan. And I went into a huge, lecture about the Kenny family, brought things up from World War II and all this stuff and what they were doing. And they were over, they said, where is the plaque now? I said, it's supposed to be in your landscape plan. They had the whole plan there, nerd, so that corner. So I got them to some sort of dramatics to make it as a condition. It is now a condition of the landscaping. So when I got all through, Bruce Byatt, who some of you might know is on the track, informed me that the new track is going to come right through and cut off the corner. So at least we are on the conditions that the History Association will be consulted and we will be in charge of where that plaque goes, because we don't want to lose that plaque. And that's what happened. Any questions on that?
The best part of living here all your life, when things disappear. Any other old business? Under new business, would the nominating committee present the officers?
Again?
There's a reason.
If you would like to nominate someone from the floor, please do. But here we go. You want to read them. President, Mid Dornan. First Vice President, Pat Pearson. Second Vice President, Jerry Sirkanovich. Secretary, Tom Piazza and Mary Crosby. Treasurer, Sonia Darling. Membership, Pam Wilson. Editor, Gary Shells. Archives, Bonnie Jo Collison. Staff Coordinator, Margaret Murskowski. And Newsletter, Thomas Mercer Hirsch.
Are there any nominations for any of these offices? You feel free to nominate. The board is a very congenial board, and once you get here, you have such fun putting the newsletter together, you don't want to miss it. So it's not hard to get officers, which is rare in a lot of organizations these days. So will somebody move that we accept the nominations?
Okay. You want me to move? I didn't know I quit if I was on. Yes, I will move that we accept this latest presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that the nomination be accepted as nominated, the names be accepted as nominated. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations. Margaret, would you like to make some announcements?
That I could do this during new business. Washington School will be celebrating their 100th centennial anniversary next year, and they'd like to do celebrate all year long. One of the items that the principal would like to do is a little kiosk or bulletin board in the lobby of past students, and with possibly a childhood picture, as well as a picture of the person as an adult and maybe a paragraph or two about what the person has done since they left Washington School. So there'll be more details in the future at this point in time. Please look out for that. And if you have any questions, my phone number will be in there and you can call me. But if you went to Washington or any of your children or nieces and nephews, please keep us in mind. We'd like to do it as a rotating exhibit for the current children there. They're all very excited about being 100 years old, their school being 100 years old. Thank you.
Pardon?
There are a ton of school pictures in the archives.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I was going to incorporate those into the layout and stuff, yeah, but the principal just wanted me to start, you know, getting everybody all ready for it now. Thank you, Tom.
How many of you attended Washington School? Not bad. I know that I have some pictures over here of grades, class pictures, and with names up for most of them. I haven't got them on display because that wasn't part of the program today. And I think Sonny Jackson, you want to tell us what you have on the...
Well, I got to hold some probably mid-40s to about 55. I got some fellow students, and I found another fellow that he was here during the war years. So. In fact, he went to both schools. He went to the old one. He said sometimes they go over to the old school, and the Army was in there during the war, and he'd go over there and actually go over there and get something to eat over there. The military was in the old brick building just before they tore it down.
Well, we have a book that we're starting with for Washington School, and I say Rosemary Corbin gave us all of the years that her two children were in school. So I think it's interesting that it's 100 years old, and we could help a lot. Bonnie Joe is working. How many of you have ever used our walking tour of Point Richmond? Okay, well, it was put out during the centennial, and Bonnie Joe is working with somebody from the convention visitors.
No, Jan is an independent, she has her own business. She's the one that did the original one that she contracted for during the centennial celebration.
And they're updating it so that soon we'll have a new brochure, which is really a nice thing. Is there any other, before I go to Pat, any other new business?
The neighborhood council has put together a group to get the wigwags going again, finally. And we will have a display, you know, a kiosk, well, sort of like the track, you know, concrete with a plaque on it.
Okay.
And I believe the History Association is going to join with us on that.
Right. And we have to approve the wording of that.
Well, that's what I brought.
Okay.
Now, this wording is, you know, is subject to revision because I'm not the historian, and there may be some things in here that need correction. So,
yeah. Well,
you're in charge, Ned.
Actually, we have a chairman of the plaque committee.
Well, I tried to keep it to tweet level, which is 140 words, but this is a bit more. Mm-hmm. And I understand Betty Tarr was going to work up the plaque for you. Is that true?
I'm not just sure what's going on there.
I haven't spoken with her.
Right,
but
right.
I can imagine, you know.
So what I'll do is I'll put this on the sideboard over here so that you can read. There's several pieces, several copies, so you can read what it is. Last year, there's a Gateway Foundation in Point Richmond that gives out grants just to Point Richmond to nonprofit groups. And this year, we were very fortunate to be awarded one of the larger grants from this foundation. And that was to form we called it Windows of History or something. But anyway, Pat Pearson has taken this on, and so she's going to show us pretty much what these plaques are going to be, the historical plaques. So if you want to...
Okay.
You can ask questions. I know that she's got things to sign.
The idea for this started at a convention I went to in Nevada City, and please raise your hand if you can't hear me. I can project when urged. And they had these signs similar to this. There's were like this in the different windows, and they were inside the windows, not outside. They were on foam board like this, and they put them out for special occasions, and then they took them back. They did not belong to the people who owned the store because they wanted control of them. Well, I picked up on that idea, and with their cooperation and explaining how they wanted how they worked. I wrote for the grant, and it was approved. And part of it, I'll read some of it. It said, the concept is to make the history of points come alive through window plots. The history and photographs of individual buildings and street scenes in the Point Richmond Historic Downtown District will be researched through archives to create the window displays. The murals will be mounted on foam board and placed in the businesses. A small placard near the photo gives a brief history of the building or the street scene. They'll be displayed for specific events by team, and we will maintain control of this. And another part of this came to me also when Margaret talks about the children touring down to our Point Richmond. Fourth grades come through once a year. Last year when we did it, I thought how nice it would be if we could just have those plaques there and say, this is this and this is that. And you'd have their attention, and the teacher sometimes liked them to have to read it and maybe play some sort of a game or a, they have, you call them when you hunt stuff, scavenger hunt in Nevada City, and we could even capitalize on that. So we also plan to contact the Business Association, Neighborhood Council, Westside Improvement Club, and Washington School and get a lot of input. So I've been working with Gary and Mid, and we've come up with some pictures. This is, as Gary says, strictly prototype, right, word. And this is the Lang Drugstore. Some of you may have known it as Andrews or as Bob Hartnick.
Bob and
Sherry. And Gerald's. And I think Edibles was in there right before the locksmith came in. And it is the oldest building, commercial building, in the Point Richmond. So that's sort of why we started with this. There are a lot of ways to approach it. Gary, this is the building, the really old one. Actually been changed very little, painted, but actually nobody, for some reason, they didn't decide to make it better. And then there is a picture that shows the Lang family in front of the building, the mother and father and the child. Now, what I want is, I'm going to put this up here, and I have paper here and a pen, and I want comments from you on what could be changed. We've got already a few. And what locations you might want and whatever you think would improve this or special places you think should be up. I think it's going to work very well. There will be no cost. We've got a very generous grant, and there will be no cost to the merchants or to the History Association. And we want to do this really well because I don't want to read this whole thing, but we just hope that by having these in here, now Gary's suggesting, which I really appreciate, they call it Windows on History in Nevada City. Gary is just going to call it This Point in Time, and I think that will work really well for us. And these are going to be up so people walking around will know the historic significance of all these buildings, and they will be able to help. Now, for instance, we've got this is street view. You can do a street view. This is looking down Washington Avenue. And it's got cars in it and all the different things. You can do strictly a street view.
Cricket Hotel? Hmm? At the Cricket Hotel, right.
Yeah. But it goes on down to the Cozy Candy Store and all these buildings. Most of them are still here, except, of course, the Cricket Hotel that burned down a long time ago. And that's one idea. You have, this is the Cozy Candy Store here. Cozy Candy Store is right now is where they do the fingernails of hair. And this is a picture from inside that was given to a member of the Turkovich family. What is her name, George?
It's Pat Halleck.
No, her...
Used to be Alamano.
Alamano. And they owned this, the Cozy Candy Store. And you can see here they have milk for 19 cents. and she has more information on them. And we can put that up. There are a lot of ways to go with it. And we like to get as much variety as we can. We don't want to just put a picture here and somebody there and all that. Do you have any questions?
Are these to be permanently inside the building?
Inside the windows.
Inside the windows?
The window of, yeah, so they look
but,
out, right.
But not permanently.
No. The idea
brought out on, we're having a dumping up on Thursday, so
right.
Everybody puts their thingy bobs up on Thursday.
Like May, they had stroll? No, we don't have it anymore. Anyway, it would be out for something like that.
But if the store wanted to leave it in the window all the time, they could, couldn't they?
I don't know. It seems to be this. But they discovered in Nevada City that if you want to take care of them, you better pick them up. And they might want to change their... That's something we can work out in a
committee,
good suggestion. Yeah. Bonnie?
Well, I was just going to ask why they couldn't stay in permanently, why they would have to come in and out. I think photocopies of photographs.
That's right.
Right? So that wouldn't be too difficult to replace them. I mean,
That's true. That would make more sense.
I don't know how the merchants feel, but it almost seems a shame not to come out all the time.
That would be good. We don't have to follow what they did there in Nevada City. Just a minute. Mary? Julie?
Yes. That's a Pat's daughter. We went to Nevada City a couple of times. I was lucky enough to accompany my mother up to the History Association meeting. Preservation meeting in Nevada City. We first saw these, and we went back and talked to the association about a month before you actually submitted the proposal, and the photographs in the windows. One of the problems in Nevada City is you have in some of the buildings, like Lang Drugstore building, is that the merchants have limited display space in their windows. So they were really only able to get the commitment from the merchants to keep the placards in the windows for History Week or History Month. And when the History Preservation Conference, there was a special thing. Because their placards were a lot bigger than this, I recall. I think they were probably
20 by 24,
that's a lot smaller.
What is that, Gary? 20 by
13 by 18.
Yeah,
they were quite a bit bigger, and so they would block quite a bit, like if you had a jewelry store or an antique store, they'd block quite a bit of the merchandise, so they were able to get the commitment from the merchants to keep them in for a limited period of time. And also wanted to keep control of them so they would come and get them and store them. They had some copyright issues, which is why they didn't want to leave them with the merchants. They had some copyright issues with the who had this. There was one photography studio in town that owned the copyright to a lot of these historical photos. And so they had special permission to use them, and that's one of the reasons why they had an agreement with the History Association there to come and get the placards, and they wouldn't be used for other purposes. But that's why they weren't left all the time with them.
Okay. Anybody, more questions? The more the merrier, because we really want this to be work well. Thomas?
I think Teresa was right. I think they would fade if they were left out on a permanent basis. And while they are prints of which we have the originals, it's still you don't want to have to keep remaking them all the time.
Right.
And I would think that a couple of months in the sun and it would be pretty pallid.
What do you think?
Well, there is a sun preservative you can put on it. Have you ever used that?
No.
It works pretty good.
The UV, they use that in Nevada City.
3M makes it. You just put a coating of that over it, and it pretty much stops the fading.
Could this be something that a committee would come, it's just new, this is a new thing, and these are good comments.
Yes, excellent. Some more.
Pat.
Yes.
I was thinking that it is good to take them out every once in a while because people pay more attention to it when they're there.
That's right.
Once in a while.
Yeah, that's a good point.
One more thing. If you figure out how you want those images to go together and the images are put together electronically,
mm-hmm.
then they can be reprinted any old time.
Oh, okay. So, that's all comments we...
Go ahead.
I personally think if I go to some of these old towns, I wouldn't mind seeing them all the time, but then again, the window space, but maybe pick out more than one time during the year, maybe pick out certain every quarter or something, maybe one week at a time or something.
Absolutely,
just tell people what's going on around here. You know, what that building used to be. I personally know what that building is. You know, some people don't. But I would like to see that. If I go through town, I don't know what everything was around here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think more than one time a year.
Well, they do, like, May is what? Historic
preservation.
And then October or something else, too.
Even if I can fly, it might be okay, too.
Yeah.
I would hope that the plaques would continue to be encouraged for people to put up plaques so those are a permanent record that are
yes,
on the
building. We have this one, and then the Westside Improvement Club Women's Westside Improvement Club is going to be putting one over by the Rose Garden. We have yet to get the text on that, but it is about ready to go as soon as we review it. And that will be on a big rock over there.
Also, private homes that are historical, like we have two.
Like Linda's and mine.
Pat and Linda have private homes that pack plaques on theirs.
It certainly gets a lot of people stopping and looking, and Diane Frosini is here, would appreciate it. They say, did that really happen? You know. Yes, it did really happen. They did make all that stuff in that basement. But anybody wants to call me? Yes, Peter?
I was thinking if they are electronic, you could even do postcards, and perhaps the merchant would be interested in incorporating their name in it or something.
Uh-huh.
You know,
that's a thought.
Yeah, that would work.
Not a new idea, but it's been going on since about 1900. Doing the exact same thing. I know I collect them.
Yeah, okay. Is there any more? Tom, did you have your hand up? No.
Well,
if any more questions, contact me.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to interrupt the meeting. And,
hello, everybody.
I guess you all know that there's a national park here in Richmond, so we're pretty famous now. And they're collecting memoirs, you know, the stories of the Rosies. Nobody ever came and got mine. So I decided I'd write it myself, and I'll just go around sharing it with people, and then maybe someday they'll be interested in my story, too. So anyway, I heard you were having a meeting, so I decided I would come today and share it with you. So this is the story of me. Back in 1941, news traveled slow in Oklahoma, and it only came to my hometown of Muldrow when it had no place else to go. We didn't even hear about Pearl Harbor until the day after it happened. The hauler at the cotton gin came running into work and told all the men. Daddy came barreling home in his old Dodge, shouting for me to break out the radio. It was a nice big wooden radio, but the only power we had for it was under the hood of that car. Daddy hooked a cable to the battery, ran it through the kitchen window, and hooked it to the back of the radio. And when we switched it on, there was President Roosevelt talking about the date which would live in infamy. I was upset and excited both. I knew that Charlie Guthrie, the love of my life, would join the service right away, if not sooner. I'd have joined myself, but I was only 17. Charlie came visiting that night after supper, and we sat under Mama's myrtle tree, spooning and whispering. He said he wanted to fight for his country and see the ocean, and he could do both by joining the Marines. Well, I cried, partly because I was scared for him, and partly because I wanted to see the ocean and fight for my country, too. Then Charlie asked me to marry him, and I said yes. So he went in to ask Mom and Daddy if it would be all right. Well, they said if we felt the same way after the war, they'd be satisfied to have Charlie
as a son-in-law. He came back out and told me what they said, and he write every day, and I said I would too. Then he was gone. Well, Muldrow was a small farming town where Daddy worked in the cotton field, but he never made enough to amount to anything. So when he heard about war jobs in California that were paying $1.20 an hour, that was it. He told Mama to pack up our things, and we set out for California. Well, we were as broke as water snakes when we got to Richmond, California, but in less than a day, Daddy got a job at the shipyards. I didn't tell him what I had in mind, because I was pretty sure he wouldn't approve, but I knew I was going to work too. I heard on the radio that women were taking over men's jobs while they were in the service. So as soon as Daddy left the house, my sister dressed me up, Sunday dress, stockings, big hat and gloves, because in those days, that's how we dressed, even to go into town to buy something. I found the Kaiser Shipyard's hiring hall and a poster that said, "Wanted, women to be trained to do important war work. Wages paid while necessary, permanent, no experience necessary, permanent work, and opportunity for advancement." Well, this was for me. I waited in line only to find out that I had to go to the Boilermakers Union Hall first and join up. Well, there was a line there too, and when I got to the front of that, a man looked me up and down, then shook his head. "No, no, we don't take women," he barked. He seemed to really dislike me, and I couldn't understand why. So I decided to go back the next day wearing slacks. Thank you. But I didn't get along with that fella any better in pants than I did in a skirt. It was the same thing all over again. So the next day, I tried again in a pair of Daddy's overalls. But when I walked in, the no women man just laughed and said, "You again?" I walked away beak red and just about to cry. But a union ship fitter pulled me back in line and said I was his sister. And by golly, they told me to report to welding school the very next day. Well, there were eight of us in welding class, all women, and our teacher was a little goat-bearded man who thought that teaching girls to weld was the funniest thing ever. He kept saying that welding was just like crocheting, and it didn't matter how many times we politely said we knew less about crocheting than we did about building ships. We learned that we'd be building Liberty ships. President Roosevelt called them the Ugly Ducklings. They were 441 feet long and 56 feet wide, and they could carry 10,000 tons of supplies or 230 million rifle bullets. Well, the Liberties started out as a quarter of a million different parts that had to be put together into 120 prefab units. Then you welded those 120 units together, put the fittings on, and presto, you'd built yourself a ship. It seemed like an awful lot of work, but when the man said they took about 4 months to build, we thought that sounded pretty efficient. But little did we know, we'd soon be making them in half that time and beat all records by building one in 4 days. After welding school, they put us to work in the yard. And you can believe it or not, they actually had a chaperone to escort us around. We were about the first women they'd ever had on the ways. Some of the men would whisper sex-type things in our ears, but we ignored them. We'd have put up with anything before we let anyone say a woman couldn't hack it. Well, me, they set to work welding the deck houses. Those are the big cabins up on the main deck where they run the ship. They gave me a stinger, a welding torch, and a wire brush, along with a helmet with dark glass to look through. Then I set out with my long electrical cords, leads, we call them, coiled around my shoulder. Well, I knew was no athlete, but I could tell I'd better become one, or the job was going to kill me. I had to climb up 3 flights of scaffolding, carrying everything. Each lead was about 25 feet, so every time you walked that far, you'd have to plug another one in, like an extension cord. I carried my stinger and welding rods in a wooden box. Even the clothes were heavy. Leather overalls, a leather jacket on top of that, and big leather gloves. You needed those because sometimes a little patch of metal would blow up on you, and red-hot BBs would shoot out. Most of the time, they'd hit the front of your jacket. Every welder's jacket was filled with holes. But once in a while, one of them would find its way through the cuff of your glove and burn your wrist. I even got one in my eye once. Now let me tell you, it's really tough staying religious when that happens. Now to build a deck house, we'd start by standing on what was meant to be the ceiling and weld the sides onto it. That was tough because as you went up the wall, you had to weld over your head. And if you think that's easy, you should try it sometime. We were always relieved when we finished that and the crane would come in to flip the whole thing over so we could do the floor. And you know, that darn little teacher was right. Welding was a lot like needlework. You'd make little overlapping crescents and a kind of bubbly stuff would form on top of that. Then you'd take your wire brush and rub that off till it was right pretty. It was noisy, busy, and exciting as all get out. The chaperones didn't last long because we didn't have any use for them, and the Army did. We got stronger and tougher all the time, and more women came in every day. By 1944, we were 1 out of 4 in that shipyard. And you can bet the men started to accept us. And that fella at the Union Hall must have been pretty upset by this. I was making more money than I ever thought I could. I started at 90 cents an hour, but soon they made me a journeyman, and I got $1.20. Then I switched to the graveyard shift, where I earned $1.56, premium pay. Production was on round the clock, and so was Richmond. It had started out a sleepy little town of about 24,000, but now it was 5 times that. And since people were always coming and going, the stores, the diners, and the movie houses were always open. We'd go out and buy ourselves big hats and pretty underwear and then sit and watch the newsreels. Sometimes they'd show a Liberty ship sailing into Russia or England, and we'd stand up and cheer. Well, that's what I was doing the night that Daddy caught me. He had suspected something was up, but he spent so much time on the job, we never saw much of each other. Now he sat me down in the kitchen with Mama and yelled, "Wasn't I ashamed of myself? And didn't I know how dangerous it was?" And when he found out how much I was making, 36 cents an hour more than he practically fainted dead on the floor. He told me I was to stop work instantly, without delay. Toot sweet. Daddy always said toot sweet when he was really mad. It hurt me, and I teared up, because I knew I could never quit. And Mama just rocked herself from side to side, and I couldn't tell what she was thinking. Then Daddy said I had exactly 2 options. One was to quit, and the other was to leave his house. I swallowed hard and told him I'd be out just as soon as I could find a place to go. I did figure it would be hard to find somewhere to live, but I had no heart to look. It was November, coming on to winter time, and the yard was open at each end, so you better believe it was cold. The wind would just come in without stopping to knock. I got some extra big boots and put on 3 pairs of socks with layers of newspaper in between. One of my friends saw that I was down in the dumps and came up with a swell idea. I'd never seen a ship launched, and they were launching a Victory ship that day. The Victories came after the Liberties, you know. They were bigger and faster. So when our shift was over, we started off to see the launching at shipyard number 1. We got down there, and they were still painting the ship, which didn't seem right to me, but I figured J. Edgar Kaiser probably knew a little bit about what he was doing. I watched him for a while and thought to myself that while painting wasn't quite the job that welding was, it was still honest-to-goodness work. That metal was icy cold, and there was plenty of stooping and reaching that you had to do. And then one of the painters caught my eye, and I was so dumbfounded, I nearly fell down on the seat of my pants. I said, "Mama, what are you doing up there?" Mama waved her brush for me to come up on deck. There she was, more than 40 years old, shivering, because she hadn't learned yet to wrap her legs before putting on her trousers. "Mama," I asked, "how'd you get into the painters' union?" "Well, they laughed at me some," she said slowly, without leaving off her painting. "But I just put my hands in my pockets and told them I was going to work." "Well, does Daddy know?" "Not yet," she said, "but he will, and he'll come to accept it from the both of us if it takes him 50 years. This war is too important to miss out on, and the men need us a lot more than they're willing to admit." So we had a hug and a little cry, and then Mama said, "I'm painting this one really pretty. This could be the ship that brings Charlie home." Just then, an announcement was made for everyone to get off the ship. It was ready for launch. We scrambled and stood there with the other workers and cheered as a lady named Edna Riley broke champagne on the bow of the ship and said, "I christen thee the SS Red Oak Victory." The Red Oak Victory was launched on November 9, 1944, and it served in 3 wars and was finally put to rest in Suisun Bay. In 1993, the Richmond Museum Association learned that they were beginning to scrap the vessels that were in the reserve fleet. And they were actually doing it right here in Richmond then. And ships were coming in all the time. We got to thinking, you know, there's absolutely no indication in Richmond, no memorializing that there ever was a shipyard. And yet those shipyards changed Richmond forever. So we decided we better do something about that. And they had 3 victories up there that were built in Richmond. So we began the task of convincing the world and Congress and even George Miller and our local citizens that we could restore a ship. And back in 1993, the Richmond Museum was... it's kind of a little organization, you know. But we finally convinced them all that that was a good idea. And Congressman Miller wrote the legislation authorizing the ship, giving the ship to the Richmond Museum. And it was tacked on a Coast Guard Reauthorization Act, this little obscure paragraph at the end of that act. Well, this was in 1995. That's the year Congress did not adopt the budget. There were budget implications to the Coast Guard Act. So, died. Well, Miller and Feinstein and Boxer reintroduced it the next year, and it passed unanimously, and then it was ours. Two things the Richmond Museum had to certify: that we could have $100,000 by the time we accepted the ship, and that we would create it as a memorial, and if anything happened that we couldn't, we would give it back to them so that they could use it in the event they sometimes needed it. Well, for 2 years, and we worked very, very hard to get the money, one day, we just sent out letters all over. One day, a man called and asked if he could talk to me. And I said, yes. So we met at the museum, and at the end of the conversation, he says, sounds like you need a little bit of seed money. And I say, yeah, a little bit. The next day, he left. This is like 10:30 in the morning. The girls at the museum called me to say there was a letter from this man, and did I want them to open it. I said, oh, yeah, well, what's another congratulations or good luck, but no. In it was a check for the $100,000. So I said to Congress and everybody, we got the $100,000. I had to get a berth from the Richmond, but that I figured wouldn't be a problem. But it turned out it really was a problem. They said, the city manager with his little glasses on, under no circumstances is that ship coming to Richmond. And I said, well, it looks to me like this is something that has to go to the city council. And so we rounded up all the volunteers who'd been working on the ship up in the fleet. They allowed us to work up there, start the restoration, fill the city hall, took a model of it, and laid it on them. And it was unanimous that they let us have the ship. But then the debate came as to where it was going to be. So in our naivete, we thought out at Point Mulati, there's this wonderful wharf, nobody's out there. The Navy said, okay. Well, it turns out there were other plans in the works for it by the committee that was appointed for its use. Turns out it would have been a terrible location. The currents out there and the wind would have just buffeted us around unless we knew what we were doing. So we finally got Terminal 1 at the foot of Dornan Drive, right here at the point. It was wonderful for us. And we were there until 2004, when we moved to where we are now at the port. So the museum, on the year before the ship was actually granted to us, at the city's birthday party, on the 95th birthday, on the it was 1995, that would have been the city's 90th birthday, the museum adopted its memorial statement for the ship. So now, instead of scrap for the manufacture of nuts and bolts, it will be a lifetime maritime memorial to the men and women of America who made victory possible. A memorial to the men and women who worked in the shipyards and in all the wartime industries, and to all the young men and women everywhere who lost their lives and limbs serving this country, and to all the people who worked at home keeping our towns alive as the fury raged abroad, and to all the people of this country who believe in democracy, fair play, freedom, and human dignity. Thank you for letting me tell you my story.
Lois is president of the Richmond Museum of History, but when she's very modest when she talks about the we this and the we that, just substitute the we for the I, because she's the one that's been the whole thought in my mind when she went to Sacramento, she's gone to the Congress people, she's been the force behind it, and we really appreciate that. Role.
$7,000?
I want to know more about it, too.
Okay.
There's a dry dock thing that I want to know about this, too. Well, you know, in 2007, we began work on $1 million grant to do the hull and, I mean, to do the superstructure and the electrical system and get rid of the porta-potties and get a sanitation system. And then we applied for a Save America's Treasures grant in 2009. Very disappointing. We didn't get it. So I decided, well, I'm going to reapply again. And I just changed the language a little bit and a different strategy for what the threat was. Not only the threat to the ship and its life, but to what we're doing, the same thing that the other ships are doing up in the fleet in terms of the degradation to the environment, and they funded that to the tune of millions of dollars to get rid of those and have them scrapped, and to let people in China make money off of it, and all these scrappers. So I noted that it was a national position that has been taken, and we are in that same condition. Well, I got a phone call from Miller's office one day and said, congratulations, you got the maximum grant. So we got $700,000. We can match it with in-kind or money, whatever. We can get all the in-kind services and we can do a lot of the labor. But that doesn't buy quite all that we want to buy. We really want to get some cash, too, to maximize the $700,000. And so we're working on that right now. So if you know anybody that has like $300,000, we're in the market. Okay. We have hopes of going in this summer. It takes only 2 weeks to do the hull and the engine room, open up the sea valves and do all the things that they're going to do in dry dock. And that just seems amazing to me that they can be done so quickly. But if that's the case, we really look forward to be sailing a year from now. And so you watch the papers, and you come and sail with us a year from now.
Okay. Isn't there something about a $20 certificate you can buy or something?
The first cruise is going to be $150 per person. But if you buy certificates now, you can save $30 on that. They're $20 each. 6 certificates would be $120. And so then when we're ready to sail, you will have invested in the restoration process and helped us meet our match. And so they look like bonds. And this is another thing. The federal government is kind of nutty. I made this beautiful bond, looks like a federal bond. It said United States government, it's signed by Morgenthau, and all this looked really great. But I put in the name, the Red Oak Victory, and it was for the first sail. And they said, they referred it to their high security, Internal Revenue. Said, you know, I don't think you better do that. You can't use Morgenthau's name, even though it's long gone. And those bonds, somebody might think they're real bonds. We really did a good job on them. So anyway, we had to redo the whole thing and make it our own bond. And it's got the ship and the date and the museum, and it's got the issue date and all. And so it looks very, very nice. And maybe 60 years from now, it will be just as beautiful and valuable as the bonds they wouldn't let us use. So you will get a nice certificate. And then when you've got 6 of them, you can sail with us. Or you can pay the $150 just before we go. That's it.
Again, thank you very much, and I thank everybody for coming. We will adjourn the meeting if there's no objection, and we have lots of punch and coffee and some, looks like pretty good snacks over there. So again, thank you for coming, and if you haven't joined the